Mark chapter 10, our sermon text this morning will be verses 35 to 45, but just to set some context, I want to start with verse 32. Mark 10, beginning with verse 32 and reading to verse 45, it's found on page 1166 of the Bibles provided there in your rows. Let us listen carefully to God's holy word. Mark writes, "Now they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was going before them, and they were amazed. And as they followed, they were afraid. Then he took the 12 aside and again and began to tell them the things that would happen to him. 'Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles, and they will mock him and scourge him and spit on him and kill him. And the third day he will rise again.' Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask.' And he said to them, 'What do you want me to do for you?' They said to him, 'Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory.' But Jesus said to them, 'You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?' They said to him, 'We are able.' So Jesus said to them, 'You will indeed drink the cup that I drink, and with the baptism I am baptized with, you will be baptized, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared.' And when the 10 heard it, they began to be greatly displeased with James and John. But Jesus calls them to himself and said to them, 'You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many.' Remember, the grass withers and the flower falls, but God's word abides forever." This morning we're looking at this passage in light of our series on discipleship, and we're noting that disciples are called to humility. Disciples are called to humility. Humility in our society today is a term that is somewhat out of vogue. After all, we want to see those who are strong, those who are great. When's the last time you remember a humble athlete? What humble athlete has a poster that you hang on your wall over your bed or you long to be like one day? But how many of you remember the one who boasted, "I'm the greatest of all. Fly like a butterfly and sting like a bee." Right? How about in terms of sports discussions, we always have the question of who is the greatest of all time, and you start throwing up various individuals and candidates in order to determine who's greater, and you compare stats and you compare wins and you compare championships and all that sort of thing. This doesn't apply only in sports, but we often like a sense of pride or boasting on the part of politicians. When's the last time you voted for a humble candidate? When's the last time you've seen a humble candidate arise to national prominence and be able to garner enough votes in order to secure office? The sense of boasting and pride is rampant within society, and our society isn't different than societies that have gone by. After all, Nebuchadnezzar boasted of his pride and his strength, and kings of Israel had to work through that as well. It wasn't until David took to himself the measure of counting Israel in order to see how many people were actually a part of the nation and how strong and how great it was, that he then had to be humbled in the nation with him with some type of affliction. Pride is of no surprise to us. It's been present at all times. And yet it is a struggle and a challenge that the believer must deal with, and it must not be present in the life of those who follow after Christ. In fact, Jesus, in our passage here this morning, really challenges us regarding this issue of pride by asserting for us the value, benefit, and greatness of humility. And he sets forth its value and greatness by helping us to see how humility challenges ambition, how it undercuts boasting, and how ultimately it redirects our performance. Our text this morning is of an interesting account. It's interesting because we read of a circumstance that arose between the disciples and Jesus, two of them in particular. In the book of Mark, in some respects, it doesn't quite make sense why this is brought out, as it were, here. But if you look over in Matthew chapter 20, I believe it is, Matthew chapter 20, this account makes a little more sense. Because Jesus in Matthew 19 had just concluded his interaction with the rich young ruler, and that one went away sad because he loved his possessions too much. And then Jesus then noted how those who follow after him will serve then as judges in the kingdom. And after he notes this position of serving as judges, James and John then approach Jesus and saying, "Hey, when this thing happens, would you allow us to have a position of prominence? Would you allow us to be on the right hand and on the left?" Now, Mark testifies that it was James and John. Matthew speaks of it being actually their mom. Both are true. It was the mom who approached Jesus. But she did so at the instigation of James and John. And so Mark then is helping us understand how these two came to Jesus. They start out with a question, and ultimately they're beginning to get into this issue of ambition. Are they not? They want something. And so what do? They come to Jesus. Notice the question that they ask. Now, children, especially pay attention to this, because I'm going to have a question for you after we see this. We want you to do for us whatever we ask. Any of you children ever tried to pull that one on your parents? "Mom and Dad, I'm not going to tell you what I want yet, but will you just say yes first? Just say yes to me, and then I'll tell you what we want or what I want." You ever done that? I'm sure you have. Remember, you're in church, so you want to be honest. You want to be honest outside of church, too. But here you see James and John doing that, and Jesus walks right through it. He doesn't agree, "Oh, sure, what is it that you want? I'll do it." He just simply asks, "What is it that you want?" Notice how there's this ambition that is on their part. They want to secure something. And really you see how this challenges humility then. Humility isn't going to be ambitious to then come to Jesus and ask this position of prominence and placement. Now on the one hand you're thinking to yourself, what's the big deal about sitting on the right hand or on the left hand? What James and John are requesting is, "You're in authority, you're in power, and we want to be the persons on either side of you, because then we get to consult with you, you look to us, and everyone sees us in the position that we're in and says, they're important. Remember, Jesus tells the account of where you should consider sitting at the table. And when he tells of that account, he says, look, if there is a position open, take the lower position. Because it's better for someone to go, hey, you're in the wrong seat, move up, than to be in the seat of prominence and then be told, move down. These individuals are ambitious for prominence. And Jesus undercuts it. Humility and ambition cannot go together. Humility and ambition cannot go together. What do I mean by that? Well, I don't mean that you can't have pursuits in life, that you can't have goals, that you can't have interests, that you can't have desires, that you can't want to succeed or to do well. But what I mean by that is, if your life is solely about me, myself, and I, if your life is simply seeking how you might garner all attention, all praise, all consideration, all focus, the spotlight, solely, exclusively, at the exclusion of all others, humility can't exist in that way. Humility ultimately challenges ambition. This challenge must be set before us. After all, pride is condemned in the scriptures. For example, Solomon tells us that those who fear the Lord will hate pride. And in Proverbs 16, we're told that pride is ultimately an abomination to the Lord. Paul assures us that pride is ultimately from the devil, for it was his action as he was ambitious in order to secure the place of prominence of God himself from before the world was created in order to secure for him that which God had. And James tells us that God resists the proud. Pride cannot be present in the life of the believer. Humility challenges ambition. Jesus, in order to help his disciples work through this, basically addresses them then in terms of their request. In order to begin to promote and work humility in their lives, he seeks then, secondly, to undercut boasting. Notice what happens. We want this position. We're ambitious. Jesus responds and he says, you do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? Now, before we jump into what Jesus says here, something that is just amazing in this passage that we take for granted is Jesus' compassion. Here you have these disciples that he spent time with, that he's invested almost 3 years of his life in. They're just before the time in which he's getting ready to go to Jerusalem and to then deal with crucifixion and death and all that surrounds that. He's spoken to them at other times about humility, about the importance of not being in a position of power, but rather of lowliness. And here he's having to deal with them again, deal with a question that he's going, and yet he doesn't respond that way. He doesn't belittle them. He doesn't put them down. He answers them as he can in a proper manner, and he leads them then to teach them and to ultimately encourage them as to the place that they ought to be. The compassion of Jesus here is tremendous. And it's something that we ought to learn in the example of humility, as we see Christ showing this to his disciples. But he addresses then their boasting. Notice what he responds with. You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and to be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? Initially, you might think to yourself, how in the world do these two things fit? After all, they're asking for position, for placement. What is Jesus' placement? What is his importance? What is ultimately his calling? Why did Christ come into this world? Christ came into this world to save sinners. His purpose was to live and to die. His purpose was to suffer. The scriptures talk about how he suffered under the law, that he might fulfill it, that he suffered under the hands of sinful men, that he had to endure great affliction, even the wrath of God himself, in order to take away God's anger towards sin. Jesus' life was a life of suffering. And Jesus is beginning to teach the disciples then that, look, if you want to follow me, if you want to be like me, if you want a position of prominence and a place in my kingdom, then guess what? It's not go to the front of the line. It's not go to the top. It's not go to a place of exaltation and ease. It's go to the back of the line. It's to go to the end. It's to go under hardship and difficulty and persecution. Jesus is undercutting any aspect of boasting when he says, are you willing to take up what I have to take up? He uses this idea of a cup and a baptism. The scriptures use this concept of a cup in the sense of noting that it is that which is set before someone that they must take up. Sometimes it can be a cup of joy. The psalmist talks about this in Psalm 32. Other times we see it as a cup of suffering and of hardship. Remember what Jesus prayed in his high priestly prayer, or prior to that, on the night in which he was betrayed. He said, not my will, but your will be done. If at all possible, what? Let this cup pass from me. What is he noting? He's noting the judgment that's getting ready to happen. And so here then, he's telling James and John, and in turn, all the disciples, you know, we read that the disciples are upset. They're not upset with James and John in terms of the question per se. They're upset because, I was gonna ask that. I wanted that position. So they're not upset because, oh, well. And yet we see Jesus undercuts boasting by noting the life of the believer is one of suffering. Amazingly enough, y'all can fill in that word yourself. Amazingly enough, if you look at the life of James and John, and in turn all the disciples, it was a life of hardship. It was one of suffering. James, first apostle martyred in Acts 12. This one who said, hey, are you willing to be a partaker of the cup that I drink and baptize, undergo the suffering that I go? Yeah, we are. James, the first martyr among the apostles. John, the same John that wrote the book of Revelation. The one who was exiled to the Isle of Patmos. The one who, prior to his exile, had a run-in with Nero, who Nero, in turn, sought to end his life by pouring hot boiling oil over him and lighting him on fire. And yet he survived, and he was then exiled later on. These individuals noted that they were willing, and even if they did not realize ultimately what was going to be the cost and what was going to be the toll, Yet we see that they were taken from pride to humility in order to be able to endure great affliction. Read through the book of Acts and see the harassment and the persecution and the death of Stephen and Peter being locked up into prison, waiting for the next day to be thrown into or to then be killed, only to be rescued and delivered by an angel. Paul in the book of 2 Corinthians talks about all that he went through and endured on behalf of the gospel. Jesus clearly did equip these men and did undercut their boasting of pride and arrogance by leading them to and strengthening them for the life of affliction, suffering, and even death. These are good lessons for us to hear and to learn as well, for all too often we rightly and quickly boast of our ability, of our interest, of our desires, even in terms of the things that we would do, only to see that we were either insincere or we meant something completely different. Because we thought it would bring ease and it would bring prominence and it would bring comfort and strength. That's not the call that Jesus sets before us. He undercuts our boasting in order to lead us then to the direction of our performance. Notice what he says. Verse 41, they were displeased. Verse 42, Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." What's Jesus saying here? There is to be performance by the Christian. But that performance isn't to earn favor. It isn't garner position before God by means of doing works. It's not for your justification. Jesus here is noting that the evidence or display of justification will be manifest in a servant-like attitude. He lays before them the people that they know around them, people in prominence, the politicians of the day, the wealthy and the arrogant. And he says, what do they all have in common? They are ambitious. They're self-ambitious. They are dominant. They're self-dominant and they're self-focused. And the world would note that in order for you to gain that, you have to look out for number one. You have to be about you. And you can't trust anyone and you can't allow anyone to get in your way. And you must overcome all of them no matter what it takes. But that's not what Jesus says. Jesus says you die to self. You deny self. You take a position of lowliness. You take the position of the lowest of the low. In doing so, you voluntarily do this, whereby you deny self, kill self, sacrifice of your own interest and desires in order to be willing to come alongside of anyone and everyone else in a position of service. Simply put, you make sure that your life isn't about you, but rather about others. Firstly, the Lord Jesus Christ. Secondly, his people. Thirdly, anyone that he brings before you. As you hear that, you would think, you would say to yourself, that's not rational. That's not logical. That's not the way in which the world goes about these things, and I would say you're absolutely right. But remember, Christ's kingdom is not of this world, and His direction and His goal and His purpose isn't in order to garner favor or security in this world. Jesus sets forth His own example and says, "What is the example that I have set before you? It's not receiving, it's giving." Christ left a position of receiving praise in order to go about bringing about praise to the Father through His life of sacrifice. Christ had it all as the second person of the Godhead prior to His incarnation. He dwelt in heaven on high with the praise of the angels in the church before Him, adoring Him and glorifying Him in relation to all aspects of His being, and yet He humbled Himself and abandoned all of those things by taking to Himself the form of a servant. Here is the one who is the creator and sustainer of this world, who made all things in this world, Paul tells us in Colossians 1. And yet He entered into this world in order to look upon a sinful people in it and bring them then into a position of favor before God. That's the model that Christ set before us. It's one of servanthood and humiliation. It's one of sacrifice. And yet Jesus notes that the greater the sacrifice on His behalf, the greater the glory for Him. What a wondrous thing to consider. How does that direct you then in terms of being able to pursue this? It reminds you that there is significance even in the little things. Because the greater sacrifice that you make, the greater glory comes. It's not a glory by the world will turn on it. It's not a glory that people would consider to be on this side of heaven all that glorious, but on the other side, it is tremendous and great. It's the praise of the Savior testifying to you, "Well done. Look at My glory in you." It helps even in the mundane. It strengthens even in the times of challenge. Moms, don't you feel that? Aren't there the times in which you think about, well, what's the point of what I'm doing? What's the value of what I'm doing? All I do is I take care of these kids. All I do is run after them and chase them, in addition trying to manage a household and manage a job and manage other things. And it doesn't seem like I get a whole lot of benefit or reward out of it. Christ encourages you with that by noting that even though this isn't a great thing in the eyes of men, the privilege to humble yourself in love and serve this child, to lead them by way of example, to teach them by way of your words, to prepare them for a life that is forthcoming, to cause them to know the difference between right and wrong in relation to the Scriptures, to cause them to understand who Jesus is and to hear from an early age that they are called upon to love Him and serve Him, and that they would. A position of lowliness and humility, and yet bringing about a great benefit and effect, all based on your action. Men, this gives you strength as well. Even in times in which you feel hurt or you feel belittled, maybe the cost that came for you because of a willingness to stand for the scriptures or willingness to identify with Christ against others. Maybe when it is an issue of sexual purity. Possibly at times a question of doing things wrong, falsifying reports, taking things from work that otherwise shouldn't have been done. And in this, you humble yourself, you quietly lead by way of example, and yet people see it, and they challenge you, and they strike out at you, and they provoke you. And yet Christ says, even through your quiet example, you're shining forth in this life of humility as to a great performance that glorifies Him. Church leaders, this is also a lesson to you. For very easily it would be that in assuming a position of service or authority within the church to sit in your seat and take to yourself attention or a rule or a guidance that would be harsh and firm, or seeking simply to promote your name or honor your business. But that's not what Christ displays for you here. And that's not the role that He calls you to. He calls you to loving pastoral concern and care for those whom He has placed in this congregation. He asks you to love them the way that Jesus loves them, patiently, kindly, unendingly. And He says that in addition to this care that you show, that there are also then actions that you manifest. Notice Jesus says that there is a call to serve all. You as officers do not get to choose who you will and won't serve. You're called to be involved in the lives of the members of this congregation. When it's easy, when it's rough. When they're willing to listen, and when they don't want to listen at all. When they're fun to be with, when they're younger and full of energy, and even when they lack energy and are going through hard times, even facing death, you cannot abandon them nor forsake them. All of life, you're called to come alongside of them in order to care for them, serve them, encourage them, and when necessary, correct them. And yet doing so how? Not with a sense of boasting, not with any aspect of pride, but ultimately in humility, following after the example of Jesus Christ. When we look at the world, they would set before us all sorts of posters and pictures of athletes that would boast and that would draw attention to their stats and their abilities and all that they've done. The church would have a poster as well. And yet in that poster and in those stats of information, what we wouldn't see is how often one drew attention to themselves and how often they were able to rise up and get ahead and advance. Instead, we would see places in which they reduced and they lowered and they diminished. And they lost, and they suffered, and they hurt, and they agonized, and they cared. May it be that God would set before you not only the examples of these individuals, but that He would even use you in that capacity, that as the churches goes down through the ages, we might see another generation that would hear the call of Christ, take up their cross, and follow after this way of humility.